My suggestion is today we take another look at Jesus' ministry out of the context of the book of Mark. Is there anybody who has not read the book of Mark? Okay, that's great. Feel good about it. What I suggested we would do is the three words up on the board, take a look at what Jesus did and how he did it and why he did it. Here, I'm interested in starting out by just asking you to let's work on one of those at a time and see what we come up with. And I have some stuff to share, maybe just in summary, and questions to raise as well when we get to that point. So, how about the first? What did Jesus do in civil ministry? What did he heal? He healed people. Really not true. I guess if you want to get into a dialogue, he didn't heal people because gobs of people he walked right by didn't do a thing. Gobs of people he talked to, and we don't know whether anything happened or not. I at least think there was a selective process going on, but not everybody did.
He's partial people of faith.
That's right, because he went into some cities and they wouldn't accept him, so he passed all the dust off his shoes and said, fine, be that way. He left. And in his hometown, he went to his places where people accepted him.
Again, I think we have to be careful to say he did that in some instances. There were places where he wasn't accepted and he came back to that place again and again. On the basis of the gospel, we'd have to say that he did that at times. I mean, that wouldn't be exclusively true. That's to affirm what you're saying, but not to give it generic.
I was certainly struck as reading straight through like that, how many times it had to do with evil spirits, possession, or demons of someone, in contrast to our more typical thinking of just physical.
Why not, rather than be so generic, we know Jesus healed. What did he heal? What kinds of things did he actually heal? There's a lot of information in Mark about what he did.
Ears, eyes, legs.
Demon possession is one.
Demon possession, ears, eyes, legs.
Mind, oh, say, eyes.
Hands.
Woman with a hemorrhage.
Issue of blood, death?
Yeah. Couple.
Sin?
Forgiveness was associated with some, not many. I think two in Mark, I recall.
Oh, there was so many that he did that wasn't explained. Just took like Mark seemed to take the highlights of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, three times it refers to multitudes being healed. In Mark. Gordon Kelsey points out that the healing today tends to be, medical. Tends to be in terms of organic disease, malfunction or function of the body, of the organism, and psychic, the healing of the mind or mental illness. And that Jesus clearly did all three from Mark record, but from the gospel records, he did all three of them. But what Kelsey points out that is that he did most of them in the area of the organic disease and in the mental illness, what is called demon possession. The assumption is that a lot of people that that's what we call mental illness. And that's another discussion you could get into. If somebody wants to play with that one as a special study, that would be fun to do too. That he didn't do a lot of the malfunction of the body, although there was some of that too. It's inclusive. But what we see as the healing professions today whether that in mental illness, it's psychiatric or psychotherapy or psychic, or whether it is by medicine or whether it's by surgery or x-ray or drugs or whatever it is. The things that have done that way today, Jesus was in all three of them, but that it is largely in those first two and not in so much in the second. And that very likely it would be true that he was more successful in that third area than we can claim being successful today. That, because even in psychotherapy, generally say that we're not very successful. We don't even know when we are successful. Some people are helped to live out some lives, but we don't know exactly what happens that heals them. The assumption being, from this brief record we have, and you see how some of these healings are, you know, a verse or two, especially in Mark, you know, who's so cryptic about the whole business. He's eager to get to Jerusalem and get to it. It's so cryptic that what we know about it was that these were significant healings. And that the assumption is that the people remained healed. Though it doesn't say that 2 weeks later or 5 years later something else happened or the same thing came back. We don't know. The assumption is that it went ahead.
Excuse me,
Elmer,
sure. You said
the third is the psychic, that which deals with the mental illness. That the third. First being organic kind of stuff. The second, malfunction of the parts of the body. The third being what we call psychotherapy or psychic healing today.
I'm still not clear. Mm-hmm. The organic is what now?
Let's see what I wrote down here. Let's see. Physical alteration of organisms like wounds, blood clots, hemorrhage, stuff like that.
Okay.
Like Malchus' ear is a wound.
Okay.
Functional disorders are where the heart or urinary system or whatever else. There isn't much of that, but there's still some of that. That's what is called functional disorder, a malfunction of one part that disturbs the whole organism. Close it off. But we do a lot of focus on today with hypertension and all that stuff, urinary infections, urologists, all their specialties, I suppose, the internal organs.
Blindness would be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then finally, psychic or mental illness. With the psychosis, hysteria, neurosis, whatever you say. Even in our psychosomatic healing, so dealing with psychosomatic, either through suggestions or whatever else it may be, we're still not sure about what happens in that. That's still a very distant field for those who are in the healing profession. Great majority is in that last area. Go ahead.
I was going to say that today we seem to have extended that last category to a much wider range. As like an internist or something, or kind of specialist, if they can't deal with whatever the problem the person is, they'll say, "Well, why don't you go see a psychiatrist?"
Yes, right. Right. Or everything is connected with stress. I mentioned something. My own doc just a couple of months ago talking about stress. Not about mine, but somebody else's. He says, "Well, of course, some of that could be stress, and some of it is illness." you don't understand it, just go see a psychiatrist. But that's right, I think you're right.
And then if that's true, it may be that almost a real large part of his ministry then was in relationship to this healing of the spirit, mm-hmm. that what we would call today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the majority of the events recorded in the Gospels do deal with that area. Almost half of the healings tend to be with that area, what we would call that arena. And even in its limited state, not in the expanded state that we have worked with, that we work with today. Okay. Did any of that touch you in different ways, or strike you in a way? Just talking now about what, not about how or why. Is anything
struck me?
I just found it interesting that it would be curious on the follow-up, like the guy that was out on that island by himself that was supposedly an evil demon running around and had several spirits in him. What happened to him afterwards as he ran back into his village?
Yeah.
And the village knows somebody is nuts in the first place and he's running back fine. I was wondering how an idiot maybe destroyed him before he could say anything.
Yeah. What the reaction of people were to that kind of event, too.
Maybe if he was coming in with another demon inside him.
Yeah.
Here he comes again, Martha.
It struck me with to what extent the emphasis is put on what Jesus does, his healing ministry, compared to what Jesus says, and how concrete the healing is understood.
Yeah, I always thought that Jesus' purpose here was to forgive sins. I mean, we all go to heaven, you know, that kind of thing. And not much on the concreteness of it all, and the healing physically and mentally, and the now, you know, the now has escaped me completely for many years.
Mm-hmm. He based his own legitimacy on that when John sent messengers to find out what's going on. So he did signs and wonders, and healed.
What do you do? What struck me, because I've been playing with the Gospel of Mark for some couple of years now, is how I didn't recall that it stops in chapter 10. I think that the last chapters, it's in all chapters except 4. There's a healing in every chapter except chapter 4. And then it stops in 10:46 or something like that. And then the last three chapters are strictly, you know, the Jerusalem events. I think I mentioned to you that the story, as it's told by this omnipotent narrator, takes a turning point in chapter 8, about the middle of chapter 8, near the end of chapter 8, when he is he's all up in the north and traveling around and doing all kinds of stuff. The days are all filled with stuff. And the writing is quite obviously... busy writing. And then he went here, and immediately he did there. People came to him, and then he went over there, and he went into the far country, went into the non-Jewish country, and then he talked over this time, and then all of a sudden, it has the event of Peter responding. Well, who do you say I am? Well, you're Christ, the Son of the Living God. And then the thing slows down, and he starts talking about Jerusalem, and he moves towards Jerusalem. And then the last events that they focus on, and the irony that at the high point of religious life of the day, the irony of God's messenger being rejected but killed at that point.
Same thing surely struck me, because yesterday I had been through, I think, chapter 12, and so this morning I went to finish, and I had been just making a number of the healing, and I didn't have any more.
Also, the high priest's servant's ear does not get healed. Mm-hmm. I figured that would be the last one, and it's not healed
in Mark. That's right.
Mm-hmm. It just stops.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't fit what Mark was about. At least the assumptions we make in looking at Mark. Looking forward to David Rhodes, who has been a specialist in Mark for a long time, will be with us for a couple weeks this summer. And that'll be fun to hear his reception of these things, too. Oh, is that right? You know? Okay, thanks for the warning. Maybe that's why it's come. Maybe it'll be really cool. I want to say more about that, but I want to say that. Any other? Yeah.
I thought one of the interesting points Mark brought out was that he talks about Jesus healing, but also talks about an unknown person healing. So you can't, it doesn't attribute healing. in a sense of faith, because other people were doing healings at the same time.
And disciples were sent out to do it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that got me too, is I hadn't realized what a religious revival or something was going on at this time. You know, from these other sources, we know that there was other messiahs and all these people going around doing all this evil.
Yeah.
I remember the scene in Monty Python's movie The Life of Brian, where he shows the marketplace of all these people preaching.
Yeah, that's my response to your comment before. What did people do when the guy came back? Undemonized. I go back and forth. I hear people talking about how these people are all really sort of religious, sort of like that. Put up your booth in the marketplace. And then I wonder, you know, well, why would they have been so different from us today? Is it really a different generic kind of a person? Even the people today that are interested in religion, they spend a lot of time working at the office and at the factory. They don't stand around thinking and talking about all the stuff we have. And, you know, were people that different? They weren't worried about their sheep and about making something home and the kids or whatever else. Sometimes I get the feeling from Scripture and interpreters of Scripture that, well, the whole life was really oriented around religiosity of some kind. And I'm willing to say, yeah, maybe that was really different and people were really in a wholly different way, caught into religious life. And on the other hand, I wonder if that isn't just what we get out of the little stuff that came from a couple of guys who took time to write it down. You know, mm-hmm. And maybe that the majority of the life, just like if you did the history of America on the basis of the life of Walter Brueggemann, you get one view of America, you know. But if you took 800,000 Christians who were faithful in worshiping God and wanting to be something else, what kind of life would you get from that? That's a struggle for me, too. In one sense, I say, boy, they were all turned around and believed and went down on their knees. And the other ones, they say, well, you're always talking about him. Just get the supper. Let's eat. Or get the kids, we'll go to a movie. I don't know which of them it is. So that's part of my struggling about what happened.
Yeah. And yet there seemed to be the indication, too, in several of these incidents where the people expressed great surprise.
Yeah.
His teaching somehow stood out from all this other that was going on than they were accustomed to and so on. And yet they said, you know, everyone's believing him, and they were delighted one place, his translation says, in his what he was saying and doing. And they took note that never anyone else had taught like this and so on. So there was something even different in spite of all the other kinds of things.
I respond to, too. But then I say, what if you got some reactions to after one of Walter Brueggemann's speeches? And the people there say, man, he's something. And he's a great person, and we got a new insight today. And if that record got written down, you'd think the whole country had turned to Walter Brueggemann. And it was just a couple of people who went to his speech that did it. You know. So I mean, I still struggle with that.
The other part I was going to say was, I mean, for me, I guess it isn't a struggle. I can just see that there's both. I think in that part of the world, even today, or even to the Asian part of the world, your religiosity and your common life are not so separated as they are in ours. So there is, certainly Jesus' parables are filled with allusions to the common day life, the woman grooming and searching for a coin and all this and that and selling a field. And so I think you're right. I mean, it's going to come across how we write it as what we've experienced. But I think probably that it was more closely interwoven, just as today it still is, if you go to your Eastern countries.
Yeah.
I just finished reading Fromm's Dogma of Christ, and he approaches it from a socioeconomic point of view of what the masses were about at the time of Jesus. And they were, the whole social structure of the country was turned upside down because of the people losing their lands, and you had a new class of poor that was suddenly thrown to the countryside.
What's this book?
It's called Dogma of Christ. Actually, it's a collection of essays.
By whom?
Eric Fromm.
And my struggle with that kind of approach is, do we really know? I mean, what's that based on?
Well, I think it took more faith to believe Eric Fromm than it did the gospel, but
yeah,
at least it was another
right,
point of view
of
what was going
that.
On.
I welcome that, but I mean, it's those assumptions that this was all so broadly done. How many years ago we had a terrible recession? Most of the people I knew were not out of work. I knew some people were out of work, but most people didn't. I knew where the people lived who were out of work. They lived only about 4 miles north of me in the black ghetto Chicago area. But most people I hung around with, and again, a description of that recession, you know, where my this is doing, could say the whole country was like that. Gosh, you know, most of the middle class people, maybe they didn't get a raise, or the cost of living went up or something like that, and they felt pressured like everything, perhaps.
Yeah.
So I don't know yet.
No. I'd like to reemphasize something what Carolyn was saying, because they have a different idea of work.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of their work, like sheep breeding, you know, you have time to sit around and talk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you still see remnants of this, like she was saying in the Middle East, like the description of Turkish men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's doing the work? Because they're all sitting in the marketplace drinking tea and talking.
Greek, too.
Yeah, Greek.
The men are down drinking coffee. I watched them all morning, right? just looking at them to see, I couldn't understand their language, and to see the excitement and fun and laughing and arguing and everything
right.
else.
You see,
how
Italian,
I spent
even some of Italian cultures. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
Okay.
And then African tribes, too, that anthropologists have pointed this out, that they can't work all the time like we do, or else they'd rape the countryside pretty soon. There's not that much to take out of the earth that won't
That's
be replenished. Right. So that there is a lot of dead time. You know, so, and the men, I mean, the women always have work to do. But the men sit around and drink beer and or coffee or something and talk about the world.
Yeah, I asked one guy one day what they were talking about in one group. I met a fellow who had been in the group and who spoke English. And they were talking about the operation the guy had when he went to Athens and all that stuff. And there was a whole business on, just remember that now, on what healing meant and whether he should have gone and all that kind of junk.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, and as they sit around and do this talking and thinking, it's not separated out. And I mean, if you're talking politics, that has to do with your religious faith, because it's all one. If you're talking whatever you're talking, it has to do with your whole belief system.
That's good. Well, let's move on. How do they heal?
Mechanically, I was surprised at how much touching.
Well, there were a lot of non-touching also when he said that go, your faith have helped you.
So word, and even command, would be one. And touching is another. I think it's only two instances where he only touches.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of the touching is wrong with speaking. So other things.
Prayer,
right. He asks God.
Sometimes often a note of compassion was emphasized, and he had compassion.
That's right.
Sometimes he didn't even know that he healed. Was it Mark where the woman touching his brow?
That's right.
That's right.
There was God. A couple of places where the people just pressed. One is the Syrophoenician woman who touched the garment was healed, and another is where the people just came, pressed on him, hoping to touch the garment. So it's a couple of places. So the touch of his garment was a way that healing took place.
Sometimes he healed with permission. He asked, what do you want me to do?
Right.
Do you want me to do?
Right.
Sometimes he uses media like clay or spit, and
that's
I wonder
right.
what is the function of that.
Three times.
He uses an image.
Three times he uses spittle, and once with some clay, mixes it.
seems like sometimes there's a requirement of a confession of faith,
mm-hmm.
and other times faith has nothing,
mm-hmm. right.
no role.
Right. The faith of the person, and at times, sometimes the faith of friends, is a means, a method for the healing.
Something that struck me was when he had to try twice with the blind man.
Yeah, there's a gradual healing of the blind man.
Right.
Right. there, of one blind man. There are other. The gradual one is in 822. Pardon?
The one where he saw men as trees walking.
Yes, right. There's a deduction from Mark 6:3 that that Jesus used oil because he sent the disciples out to heal and they used oil. The deduction is that they learned that from him, but there's no record of that happening.
He also healed, I don't know what the word is, but anyway, there's quite a number of the instances in Mark where he asked them not to tell, not to reveal.
Yeah.
You don't really say in secret.
That's right. There's even a one where there's a sort of a sternness about it. Mm-hmm. And it's a borderline anger situation when he
makes
it.
What's that about? Okay.
What do you think? You're a biblical interpreter. I mean, everyone is.
Yeah.
What was the last? Yeah, on one hand, he'd say, don't tell anybody. And other times, he'd say, go tell the whole world. And it just switched suddenly, it seemed like.
Mark, if I can share with you about Mark, Mark tends to keep it a secret. And Mark's portrayal, and this is a clear interpretation, one I have to endorse too, is that Jesus didn't want the people that are hostile to him to move in too fast. And so he would sneak away, or he would dodge issues. They'd raise this question, and he'd answer another question, or put a question to them. And the assumption is, the conflict, the plot of Mark is, he comes announcing a new rule that all of these things are a sign of. And that sets him in conflict with all of the authority. The local authorities up in Galilee, and then the Jerusalem people start coming up to find out what's going on. And then the government gets in the way too, and that conflict. And Jesus seems to recognize that if it goes too far, he gets it. And then at 8, then he begins to loosen it and say, yep, it's going to happen. In fact, I'm heading there. And so then there isn't as much pushback on I'm getting the word out. I'm not saying that it happens in all of the Gospels that same way, but Mark's tendency tends to be to describe this conflict building until it comes, and Jesus dodging until the end, and then lets it come. And the contention may be that he was scared.
Probably was doing it on the Sabbath and was breaking law.
Oh, and he does this early. The first healing in Mark is on the Sabbath. And that sets it up right away. Calling to question some of the bases of the religious faith of the day. I don't personally move away too quickly from the fact that as he was working out the struggle, he was scared.
And also, he saw what happened to John the Baptist.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And there's probably a lot of these other messiahs in general.
Mm-hmm.
It struck me that in the Gospel of Mark we meet the compassion of Jesus more through what he does, and whereas the impression I get of Jesus through what he says is more the tough Jesus, which is definitely not a sentimental picture of Jesus. I find some of his sayings rather harsh.
He's harsh with his disciples in Mark, though, too. He takes them on. And there's a number of private conversations that he had where he just chews them out. And Rhodes in his book said he thinks it's terribly unfair for what Jesus threw at them and expected them to buy into. He makes a pretty good case for The disciple is getting a tough deal from Jesus and Mark. But, you know, he's not trying to distort the wedding, but if you look at it just plain ordinary, a teacher, and saying the whole system that you're associated with is wrong. You turn the whole thing upside down and do it today. And if you don't grab and understand where what I'm about, there's something wrong with you, and so he chews it out. But I think the other is very true, though. You see his action, compassion.
I'm not sure which question this comes under, and maybe you mentioned it briefly in our last session on Mark, but it struck me again reading how the healings are so often followed on by where it's been recorded that you have people together teaching. I mean, it's not like at the wedding at Canaan, you read about that and then he healed someone. But it was always often he had been crowds around, he'd been teaching. Sometimes it tells us what, sometimes it just says he was teaching and then he went here and they brought him this or then during this time. And it just struck me that it's kind of directly related to the how.
If you look through my NEB, English Bible, but my mark is all marked up with healing, teaching, preaching, healing, teaching, preaching. Yes. And you see these things all woven together as they go through it.
One of the, when I reread this, one of the things I got out of it was how gracious and compassionate Jesus was when Mark talked, or John talked to in the Gospel about some unknown person healing in Jesus' name.
Yeah.
And yes. Jesus said, well, if good is done,
yeah.
I don't have any, a vested
interest.
That was it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you.
One of the things, I was reading a commentary by Paul Ostermeyer.
Oh, yeah.
And he says that one of the reasons why Jesus didn't want, or Mark relates the story,
yeah,
that Jesus didn't want people to know who he was because Mark is saying that without the cross and without the resurrection, people couldn't understand what that meant or who Jesus was anyway. And rather than have it be some kind of just another healer, Christ, or Mark's interpretation of Christ wanted to maintain animosity or whatever. That, and he says that the whole book of Mark is concerned about us understanding the meaning of the cross and the resurrection. And so he puts all these, or whoever the author Mark was, puts all these healing stories in to show the power of God without an explanation.
Yeah.
One of the things he said.
Yeah, that's right. That's interesting.
So that's really interesting to me.
Sure.
That you can't have faith, and that was one of the reasons why he says some of the healings have faith issues. If you have faith, you're healed, and some it doesn't matter if you have faith, because people really couldn't have a true faith, couldn't have a good understanding, even the disciples, without the cross and the resurrection.
The weakness of that, it seems to me, though, is that then all the people of the Old Testament are in trouble and without an understanding of it. But at the same time, I think he's very, very right on about Mark, because it's why Mark drops all this stuff, in my opinion, again, who knows, is to get it to that point, is, and that's why it stops where it does, if Jesus ends up dying and the hope is hung on his resurrection, will anyone meet him in Galilee? And the implication of Mark is no one will. That if it went to the cross and that happened, there won't be anybody up in Galilee. And the contention again is that it stops there because the only answer to that question is, will I meet him in Galilee after the crucifixion? He is alive. Somebody said so. Somebody saw him and says, I'll meet you again up in Galilee. But will I go? And so that focus, and that's why I think this, you know, it funnels and the thing of whoosh to Jerusalem and the cross. That's why I like teaching Mark during the summer, because you have people read it maybe three times during a week. maybe never read a book of the Bible before in their life, you know, and just play with it and look at it. Let's go to the going back to Martin Kelsey, he points out that the kind of healing that is done today, medical and, you know, largely physical kind of healing, psychological healing that is done today by suggestion or psychotherapy, you know, just the suggestion of the doctor that what you have is really nothing. It was an important part of the whole healing process, and most physicians know that their attitude, they say, you know, if they're going, you know you're in trouble. Or as they say today, well, I think we better have Dr. So-and-so look at this too. That's negative suggestion, and you're gonna respond to that. So it's part of that thing. And then what he would call psychic healing, which is really dealing with that psychoid part that comes, is often a gift of some people that Kelsey would very strongly affirm. And finally, what he feels is the sacramental healing. And for him, the sacramental healing is, quote, religious or sacramental, in which the power of God is in some way transmitted to those people. That it is clearly a connection between power outside of themselves that is related to God, not just to some person. And he would maintain that most of Jesus' healing was sacramental in that sense. Not the sense that we, as we talk about sacraments today, I mean, we've got to gather with people and do a thing. But Kelsey's evaluation of the how is that most of Jesus is there. There were good doctors, and Jesus had a good attitude toward the doctors. And Mark especially, that's an affirmation of doctors in Mark. But he didn't send his people out to study the medical profession or the physicians. And go out and check with the physicians, and then you'll be able to heal. This was much more bringing the power of God into intersection with the lives of people, which then consequently what is that? The sacramental. Okay, let's talk about why. Again, here's some deductions and maybe some concepts. Why did Jesus heal? We said some things already, but statements and implications. What's your...
Mostly to show that he was the Son of God, that he was sent here and that he could do all these miraculous healings and demon drawings. But just mostly to show that there is life after death.
In some places it said that he healed the he felt sorry for them, he felt pity for them. And that I kind of had a feeling that when he saw them, he felt hurt himself.
Yeah.
I think also when he healed people possessed by demons, it was the demons were preventing those people from being close to God. Mm-hmm. And so get rid of the demons and restore a relationship to God for those people.
I think it was a compassionate feeling of, people hurting. And I think it'd be really hard to base a faith on healing,
mm-hmm.
because of the. There was a number of healers in the country. So.
I had been taught mostly with what you said, that that's mostly what it was about, and I think there's truth to that, but I think there are others too.
I studied under Callis, and it was that the world had gone amok, and that he was bringing in God's rules compared to the devil's rules, or Satan's rule. And in Mark, it's clear the first one that recognizes Christ as being the Son of God is the dove, and the second one is the word of the demonic before he's cast out.
Okay.
Thinking kind of around about what we were saying earlier in the Holman's book, that the essence of healing has to do a lot with love, and if we have incarnate love, you know, made flesh walking around, inevitably the result of that is going to be healing, just touching that
bring love to a situation in a person or whatever. He's just going to open the doors to wholeness inevitably.
I think what is important to me is that Jesus manifests God's power in the world being compassion, love. But then of course there is a problem that Jesus doesn't heal everybody, and that, you know, is a problem. And I wonder if you can say then that that is the human side to Jesus, that he was a specific person in a specific time and situation, and he could only cover that much.
Part of that it was a joint effort, that it's a gift that has to be opened as well as and received.
Yes.
Okay, often was started, often was, not always, clearly not always, started by, the initial push was by the faith of the people themselves. And sometimes in the woman's case, she had prayed, and it was in answer to her prayer that the healing took place for it. So, I mean, it's
almost like a recognition of it.
Yeah. But again, as we've said a number of times, you know, it wasn't always there. It wasn't dependent on that. And otherwise, we, you know, it'd be quid pro quo or something like that. Yeah.
Also, usually the people who were healed were either possessed or sick or dead, and all of those things take you away from other people. Yeah. I mean, if you were a leper, you were as well as dead, And so when Christ healed those people, brought them back into relationship with other people and living in love and being able to think about God rather than being a leper or, you know, where you couldn't think at all if you were possessed. So I think that would help, be a good reason to move.
Maybe another way of seeing just what you said, this would be my kind of summary for you. Different or better than anybody else's. One is that I do think that Jesus cared terribly, what we call love, compassion, and that he hurt when other people hurt. That there was a feeling, a sympathy, a sympathetic, simpatio thing. Secondly, that there was a hostility that Jesus had to whatever caused sickness or illness. There was antagonism to what we label as evil. He bounced against it away and pushed it away. And there was, I think, much more of a recognition, if you will, and even an affirmation of the power of evil. It wasn't benign. It was dynamic. And what was the conflict, as Mark is describing, is that in many ways, but also the conflict between the dynamics of the love of God in Jesus Christ against the dynamics and power of what is evil, and is at these moments symbolized and seen and fleshed in human beings. And so the incarnate love of God meets the incarnate evil here, and it's got to be, you know, there's got to be short-circuiting all over the place, and sparks, and whatever happening. And thirdly, to some degree, when I said the other day, there's a couple ways of saying it, that he was seeking to lift them to a spiritual awareness at a different, another level. That there was, to say, maybe a call to repentance, which again is in that whole turning around, not simply saying something I did was bad, but to turn around life. That it was part of making the rule of God more obvious, even at the moment, as also a sign of what is to come. It was disassociated from God's perfect rule to be, whether in this life or in the life to come, but it was a sign that right now, that's what's going on when he says the kingdom or the rule of God is within you. You can be seen now because you have experienced this unique kind of healing. And that's why it seems again that the teaching and preaching, which is all interwoven with it, wasn't enough. Didn't seem to be enough. Lord, and without being a Jew, the healing and the preaching and teaching were all together. They weren't separated any more than body and spirit was separated. And the antagonism of faith or of the love of God to every expression of evil is a strong message coming out of it. The Gospels, certainly, for the Mark, but out of all the Gospels. And so his why was connected with the whole of his ministry. And for Christians to say then that God wills sickness is a very tough thing. God may be able to turn sickness into good. And what the role of illness or disease or even bacteria or viral infections or whatever those are, which some scientists tell us are essential to life, for the organism to survive, what all that means, see, Jesus doesn't pretend to offer a solution to that, but that the results of disease, illness, or whatever it is, which means the less, I think is what you were saying, Alana, the lessening of people's possibility as to be whole, but that is antagonistic to Jesus Christ, or Jesus Christ is antagonistic to that, and so he confronts it, and the signs are signals that that power is about, and that power can be seen, and that the cry to receive the kingdom, join it to be as a little child, whatever it is the invitation and the powerful invitation of Jesus Christ to be a part of that.
My big why, like the last chapter, the commissions and the idea that greater things and these will happen through you, does it seem like, you know, greater things are happening? Why isn't the ball just rolling with all this steam at the bottom of the hill? Is there as much healing going on now as through that one man there?
Good thing.
What was your question, Kevin? Is there as much today as there was then? Is that what you're saying?
Well, first of all, it shouldn't be, and second, is there?
You're saying it got started then, and why didn't it just keep rolling so that there's more and more and more?
Why would nobody be sick?
The next chapter of the call to homes kind of goes into that when we gain into that. And again, this for applying the healing did not continue. I think there's probably a real, to me, there's a real resurgence again. Certainly as a child, it was almost unheard of for me in my setting to think of someone actually doing physical healings, for example, in any other context than that. Stayed away from that kind of thing. That was some kind of a quack or someone putting the wool over their eyes and so on. And I certainly myself have a lot more acquaintance now with readings and people both where there are definite healing ministries and so on taking place again today.
I think disciples showed that, where he continually showed them and he told them and showed them and told them. Even told them to go out and do it. They went out and did it and still didn't believe. Totally. That's probably why it lost all its steam. The 12 couldn't even do it. How's it going to continue?
I'm skeptical about healings when the old buckets passed around too, you know? I just want to write that off completely. Just God
money,
business.
Getting money. Getting money for it.
Big God business that's in this country.
New church. Use your visa or
MasterCard. Right.
Well, there seems to me to be a narrowing already within the Bible itself, in that from talking about healing in broader terms, including physical healing, already in the letters of Paul, it is narrowed down to faith, and faith becomes the channel of healing, so that you get talking more about healing in a spiritual or psychological sense, perhaps. And I think that that influence from Paul has shaped our Lutheran tradition very much, mm-hmm. and the emphasis on faith as that which is the Christian mark and is the channel of healing.
And I think Paul was reflective of what was going on at the time. He's the one who did the job and all that kind of stuff. And I think there was a lot of that kind of resistance the Greco-Roman world had a lot to do with it. And then it goes back to how the culture shapes the church or shapes Jesus and how Jesus shapes the culture and how that's going back and forth. I think, again, that's what my struggle is about the how much was really going on. We might think the ball was rolling, and from the average person in Jerusalem, they might have, said, well, how many, well, there's 18 healings in Mark that we know about. Well, that's, Kelsey's always careful to say, these are the recorded healings, and the others, the multitudes of that stuff. Maybe that's where he cured headaches and backaches and all the other stuff that aren't mentioned most of the time, which so many people are bothered about today. Maybe that is much more so, but maybe it even wasn't as much of a ball rolling, and maybe it was closer to the still small voice business rather than millions on the airwaves and the video waves that seem to be used as a standard for measuring whether God's really at work. I'm not trying to whittle it down or anything like that, but I'm just sharing my own struggles about not trying to make sense of that.
The question I've had in the Gospel, Mark, is that when Jesus says, well, you have faith and be healed, whether he's talking about a messianic thing, mm-hmm. or it seemed that early in the Gospel that his own disciples haven't come to terms with the messianic thing, and how
and yet they heal,
and yet they heal. So when Jesus says, well, you have faith and now you're healed, sure. What kind of a faith is he talking about? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it seems clear in Mark that it, at least as much as we can deduce from that it is kinds of faith, that there were kinds, some that this particular rabbi could do something different just because he did it to somebody else. And others were, I think, as much a great need. Your child has been bothered by this demon since how long? And you just scream and cry out almost in hysteria faith. And clean. And others, my favorite is still that John 9 passage where the fellow says, well, sure I believe, but help my unbelief. which speaks for me.
Can I bring up a question?
Sure.
You don't have to deal with it if you don't want to, but you started out by talking about Kelsey and these different ways of healing and said what we today categorize as mental illness. But my question is back to that. All of the demon possession and the driving out of evil spirits that recorded in the Bible, are we saying that today we are lumping all this under mental illness? And yet that's the categories that we put in.
Yeah.
We were talking about organic healing or mental illness and so on. I guess I can't be comfortable with that. There's also some cases of this where today people say it would be what today we would call epilepsy in certain cases, possibly. And I'm not calling epilepsy mental illness.
Yeah.
So are there several
fair.
Things here?
Yes, there's several things. Kelsey surely allows for exorcisms of demonic possession. So, he certainly includes that. He feels that a lot of what was going on at that time was mental, what we would call mental illness today, but not exclusively. Some were other diseases, you say perhaps epilepsy, and others were a form of mental illness, what we would call mental illness, but also there were possessions where that deep spirit, anti-spirit, spirit anti to God,
was in control of human beings, and he feels that there are people like that today too. I want to come back to that after we're looking at Paul and James's things and talk again about what that is today, especially as we talk about some expression of that in groups of believers today. What's the result in a congregation or in a group or whoever, in a family, to the human, Jesus, or the call to human. So I'll come back to it again, but I'm willing to have more discussion now. If people want
to. No, that's fine. I guess I would just say that we need to make sure we have that added category.
That's
that
correct.
We don't only
that's
say
correct.
Mental illness, that we also say possession of evil or whatever we call
sure.
it. So we
sure.
aren't just lumping all
right.
of that as one.
Kelsey, for instance, who is one of the major spokesmen about healing Christian today, is very careful to include all of the healings, the medical kinds of healings, as well as the psychological kind of healing, the psychotherapy kind of healing, the psychic kind of healing, as well as the sacramental religious healing. And he feels all of those. So I guess maybe one answer, my guess is, that he would say to you, oh man, look at the healings. When I grew up, diphtheria and scarlet fever was knocking people off like mad. All my kids, my friends that died when I had scarlet fever back when I was about 5 or 6. I don't know how many of my playmates from school died. You don't see any quarantine signs on the doors anymore. And the estimate is that 1/7 of the world's population is alive today through technological advances. Now that's a pretty big piece of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you include, as I certainly do, God's gifts in those ways, I won't resist that. But again, if we say now instead of any other kind of healing by touch or the spirit, speaking to spirit and God's spirit being brought in, I wouldn't buy into that. But I wouldn't deny that there are, again, surprise, whatever you think you got God figured, it seems to me that's what you're ready for. Upset us, it's going to be something new. And if out of crazy technology, which does abuse a lot of things and a lot of people, also something else happens, there's that sneaking surprise that seems to be a sign of the rule of God, too.
I'm just about to say, is it a healing rite or something in the LBW?
Yes, sir, yes.
For like a service or something?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In connection with what you say there, I'm thinking of, I think especially from a Christian standpoint, that some people have been saying that this new illness, AIDS,
yes.
can be understood as God's curse.
Oh,
over
yes. Sure.
Especially a sexually loose
mm-hmm.
lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I've seen it in print, and I know people who say it. I've heard people say it.
They said that about syphilis, too.
Mm-hmm.
Herpy.
They said that about syphilis, too.
Oh.
I've heard that
more
partial.
Yeah.
Is there something on what was classified or meant in the sight of these people as an unclean spirit or demonic possession, because they accused Jesus of the same thing,
oh,
and
sure.
I'm wondering if a lot of it wasn't just that they didn't get along with the Pharisees and the norms at the time, so they labeled the people unclean spirit and excluded
mm-hmm.
them from the community. I mean, that seems to be more than just epilepsy or whatever,
yeah.
I mean, that there was a non-organic basis to it. Is there any study that's been done on that?
I'm not aware of it. I'm sure there would be, but that the people have filed in that area. I just haven't read it in that area. But the role of religious leaders and institutions, has always been very important in that. And added to the sense of it being bad.
Yeah.
I don't have any doubt that that's part of it too. I think that what histories we have from that time, records and stuff, do indicate that there were it was accepted that demonic possession was also part of it, not just what somebody had said it was part of it.
Because, you know, they came out of the background saying that if you are sick or you are deformed, it's because of sin. Right away, it's unclean. They even talked about it. If you touched the woman with your issue of blood during the menstrual period, you were unclean. So the cultic played a significant part in also adding to the burden of illness. I believe that.
But they seem to, you know, if Jesus hadn't fought back with his logic, they could have excluded him from, and they did eventually, from their community. Which
they excluded him early on, they just didn't have a way of pulling it off until
they
Sure. And you know, that's what they end up hating him, because he's so clever.
Yeah.
And he twists them around and makes them look like dupes, dopes. And you can imagine, it wasn't hard to understand why, if they had power and wanted to hang on to it, they're going to get rid of this one.